hearing from him.
Are we in the compliance of the open meeting law?
Yes.
Approval of the agenda.
I'll move to approve.
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
And just to let you know that because of our computer problems this morning, Marcia has customers in there, so we may have to adjust when she comes in to meet with us. So we'll try to probably do that towards the end.
Okay, that's good. All right.
Or we may take a break.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No? Okay. Agenda. Approval of minutes.
I make a motion we approve of them.
Do I hear a second?
Either one.
Vicki or Pat?
We won't fight over it.
No, not a bit.
Okay. Any discussion? And hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Yeah. Negative? Say no. Okay, pass. Public comment, communication, building update.
I guess I got to get this.
I believe your meeting was the last, so I think it's up to you three.
At the county board meeting, the funding failed, but then it passed. And then 10 to 6, the board moved to move forward with the design development phase using the schematic design as previously proposed, which would be everything out here. In one facility, we've had a couple of conference calls. I'm going to call it for this at this point a design team, just the architect, the construction management, the sheriff, and myself. The first meeting, or first conversation, was to make sure we were headed in the right direction. Construction management offered to call all county board members. I got a call. I know we talked to Dan and others. We had another conference call last Friday, and from that we decided to set up an administrative committee meeting for next Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I don't have that posted yet because just kind of agreed on the agenda yesterday afternoon. So we will, from that meeting, decide who is going to be on the construction team or a design team. My thought is that Lori, Fred, and Nate, along with maybe their committee chairs, but that's all part of the discussion on who signs off and who says that this is what we want. Majority of it is the jail. I think that Lori and Fred are fairly comfortable with their setups. But there is still a discussion. If you take the green area on this map that I'm looking at for social services, that space will fit on the third floor downtown.
They haven't probably seen that map, so.
But then I don't know where that puts EDRC.
So you're thinking possibly the social services would go to downtown?
There's a lot of possibilities yet.
But Bainbridge is out. Not yet.
I don't think anything's out at this point.
That's where it gets a little confusing, Mary Lou. For you and us.
Can we get copies of
sure.
Social services.
Oh, are you going to make copies?
We
social
can.
Services.
Social services
we
is
can.
The green area, and EDRC is the pink area.
Yeah, this would be us. This is social services. This all here is the actual jail part.
The yellow area is the jail. The dark
purple
would be secure area to bring prisoners in.
This would be sheriff's office. This would be emergency management. And dispatch up here. This was all common area here. The lobby, bathrooms.
Is there a lot that would have to be done?
If you want to run down
real
quick, I won't let them do anything.
Put social security. A lot, huh?
There's nothing up there. When they decided to put the third floor on that building, it was a change order, and all they did was extend the walls 12 more feet. Put the windows in. They didn't change the
underground. They didn't change the HVAC. They didn't update the electrical. So we're not sure how much it would support anything on the third floor. Because I've had three or four different things looking at it, trying to utilize that empty space. The board back then decided it was cheap space, and that's what it is, it's cheap space.
It's really cheap space now. It's not heated or cool.
No kidding.
Somebody said yesterday I had a phone call, well, you can do all that for $100,000. I said, I think it'd be $1 million, but I don't know. I'm supposed to have an estimate by the end of the week of what it would cost to upgrade that facility.
By the end of the week, okay.
To hold social services, but then again, that leaves us, what do we do if we move social services off of this plan? What do we do with ADRC? Been a couple of ideas floated around. Did you get any answer?
No to that one. No to Orchard Manor. Definitely no to that.
Pretty much backed off.
Yeah, that would be a conflict. Diana thought that would be a conflict of interest.
So, you know, David might have the option of building those two. At this point, we're moving forward with everything on this site. You know, basically outside this window and north. There's reasons that makes sense. But then when you go to the Iowa County board meeting last night and they're considering making their nursing
this
home
is Bob's original.
A 501c3.
Their what?
Iowa County is considering moving Bloomfield to a 501c3.
I've been hearing rumors.
Not
Weren't they going to combine with someone else, too?
Well, they were. Their last proposal to up my bills had shot down.
Oh, okay. All right. Interesting. The proposal, I'll be honest, since you don't know what... The proposal was possibly that we could go in a... We could go in a wing of Orchard Manor, but I had told Bob I did not think that would fly with the state, so we met with Office of Resource Development, who basically oversees our ADRC. We met with our person from that office last week, and I ran it by her, and while she said, you know, if it truly was pursued, she would run it further up, but she said, as far as she was concerned, it would not fly. Given the fact that we have many more nursing homes in this area, for one thing, and so it would appear that we would then have a. It would appear that we had a relationship with them, and we're supposed to be unbiased, and so it would potentially give them an advantage. Looking like we've got all our ADRC here.
We're having trouble getting CNAs and getting full staff, and you know, maybe we abandon one wing for something different.
So.
Lori, would you go over those colors again?
Yeah, Shirley, let me show you. So up here, this little octagon thinking up here is the jail. So that would be the whole jail pod right here.
Which and spot? The purple
this,
pod?
The gold right here.
Okay.
That is the jail. And then the purple off of here, this would be all part of the jail. They have some, like, sally ports and a garage out here and other rooms. The blue... The bright blue over here is Sheriff's Department. And then the little green adjacent to the blue right in here is Emergency Management. And then down here, this is still part of the Sheriff's Department Dispatch. This lighter yellow through here is just the common area of the lobby. Mm-hmm. The pink or salmon-y color right here is ADRC. And then the green is Social Services. And then the gray is more like mechanicals and things like that. Then I think, is the coroner stashed in there somewhere out here too? I think
yeah,
the coroner was stuck in
there
too.
Disappear.
Okay. And then like out here was public bathrooms and a public conference room that all of the departments could utilize.
When I look at this, is this formulated on a need or a want?
I will tell you from our department, It was mostly need, in my opinion, yes.
It's a need.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I you know, we added a couple smaller conference rooms, but given what I heard from GWAR yesterday and some of the things that we're doing, I think we're still in line. I don't think that we overexpanded in any way, shape, or form.
So how much are you adding?
I actually came in less space than they recommended. So,
compared to here?
It's not adding. We're not going above this at all. If anything, we're...
Okay, about the same size.
We're probably less, actually, but we're better organized.
More efficient.
The one thing that I think is too small in the ADRC is the bathrooms.
Bathrooms, yeah.
They have two different sets of bathrooms in the social services, and they're both bigger than the bathrooms that are located in ADRC, and I find that hard to swallow.
You have
we need
as
one.
Many handicaps.
Wants versus
individuals.
Needs is a big challenge. There's a fair amount of wants in here. It covers our needs, but there's also some wants.
Yeah. And then we were supposed to project out, but, you know, I would say that, I mean, we came in under, so, from what they originally thought.
Just to put it in perspective with Iowa County, this is 83,000 square feet. Iowa County is, their projection last night was 84,000 square feet. And that's no social services and no ADRC.
That was basically the jail?
18,000 square feet of it is garage.
Garage.
And they're a third size of our county.
Well, their population is about half.
They were like 18,000.
Right now, their jail holds maximum 41, and they're going to the same size as what this is projected, 87 to 107. Part of it is that the laws
like
have changed. When our jail was built, it was 250 square feet per occupant. Right now, state standard is 350. So that increases the size that you need.
What is the size of those cells?
It varies.
Different.
7 by 9 is the average.
7 by 9.
And you have a dormitory in here. You have Huber.
And when I say 350 per inmate, that's day room and cells and everything.
Right, that's just like a space allowance that you have to have, right? Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things that
like in
that
preschool,
I learned
last
Friday.
You have so much square feet per child.
That may get someone's attention. There's a special needs directly in front of the master control. So if you're looking at the yellow spot right at the bottom, there's 6 beds right straight ahead of that master control.
Oh, sure.
That's maximum security special needs. That's not counted in the...
That's not counted in what?
In the 84 beds.
Why?
That's what my question was. About a guess. So we decided the other day, well, you know, if we need 80 beds. And the theory is behind all this is right now we're operating at about 55. And that's supposedly our maximum capacity. Once we reach that, according to the state Department of Corrections, we need to ship people out. So we, you know, through agreements with the judges and everybody else, you know, try to work with what you got. So we've been running 51 to 55. The state says that you cannot be over 80% capacity because you need to adjust people for different classifications depending on how much oversight they need. That's why these areas, like I point out, right in front of that master control are the maximum and medium securities. Well, we decided the other day we can cut 6 or 8 beds out and consider that maximum security as part of it. So now we can get down to 78, 77. If you take 55 divided by 80%, that says we have to have 68 or 9 to operate the same way we are now. So then we're only 10% bigger. So there's a lot of discussion that's going to happen. And the other thing that we can do to save some of this space, it's built basically, some of the support areas are built to add, if future needed it, to add another pod like this, flipped on top of it, so you could double the capacity up to almost 200 if we ever needed to.
You mean go up a second story?
No.
Or just add out?
Just add on. You basically put this design up here.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
If you needed that. But a lot of this support is built for that 150 to 200 people. We don't need, right now we have one washing machine, this would have two with another spot for a third. Why do we need that? If we need that, we go outside or we add it later. So there's a lot of cuts that we can make. You know, I think we can cut 2 million plus off of this.
That's a considerable amount, right?
It's 10%. And there's other things that have been talked about, but I'm not in favor of, and one of them was talked about last night at Iowa County. You know, they're going from 41 beds to 80. Well, they say we'll just shell out an area, but we have a shelled area on the third floor, and that's part of the problem. You build this and you take 14 or 15 of these beds in one of the medium securities and not put anything in there, because that's the expensive part, is putting the walls and all the electronics and the fancy doors and all that. So you just shell that area. What if you never need it? That's just like the third floor. We don't want to do that. We want to get down to what we need and then have the expansion capabilities on the flip side. So those are going to be the discussions over the next 3 months.
Anybody have any questions?
Maybe a comment, being that was the no vote. The research I've done on, and again, there my no vote certainly wasn't because of ADRC and social services. I'm a huge proponent of moving social services to the third floor of the administration building. They said that parking was an issue. I talked to Fred, and he said they have 6 to 10 clients. They average in that range a day. I did a drive about, walk about two blocks off of the square and around, and there's ample parking. The other thought was even to work with the city and get the adjacent parking north of the administration building. There's about 4 or 5 stalls there from the grocery store up, you know, towards the square. If we could put handicap parking, make those handicap access only. In my estimation, that meets all of our needs, and we could work with, you know, the elevator goes to the third floor, et cetera. We could work with moving social services there, and then again, whatever we needed to do with ADRC, build a building for them, whatever we need to do then. The jail is my biggest hang-up and why I voted no. My research, again, at the county's conference, they're citing anywhere from 36 to 42% of our inmates needed to be in mental institutions and not in incarceration facilities. Just an article last week in the Telegraph Herald talked of organizations working to push for or solicit support for decriminalizing a lot of the drug trafficking crimes to the point where they would not be incarcerated. And then January 19th, as the research that I've done said that there's going to be a lot of pardons, more than in the past, for those type of crimes. So everything that I'm researching says that we're going to need less incarceration facilities, space. We aren't going to need to add more or make jails bigger, when all the research would indicate that there aren't going to be as many prisoners in the future. And again, whether I'm for or against any of that doesn't make any difference. All I'm looking at is the standpoint of what the jail request is and why they want to make it bigger, and it doesn't add up. There's only, as I mentioned, if I'm following the money, there's only 3 people that are going to benefit, 3 organizations that will benefit from the proposal, and that's the Samuels Group, Potter Lawson Engineering and Architecture, and the Baird Financial. And I don't, and I understand the hard sell on their part. They're good salesmen. They if you weren't at the last board meeting, we were scolded pretty hard by the lead from
Samuels Group.
Samuels Group, to the point where I probably had a tongue bleeding by the time I got out of there. But I thought, rather than unload on him here, I'll wait. But at any rate, no, I don't need to be lectured to, and by somebody who's standing to have a great monetary benefit from pushing a big fancy jail down our throat, and there isn't any way. And I represent District 17, and Southwestern School and Cuba City School are both going to have referendums on November ballots for their school projects. And I think it's a pretty sorry commentary on our society if we're going to have $75 million worth of incarceration facilities in Grant County in 15 years and we can't pass a school referendum. That just seems to be a tad backwards, in my opinion. So I didn't vote for the big-time jail last week, and I don't see me voting for a big-time jail in the near future.
Well, this mental health thing is certainly an issue.
There was a thing on Channel 3, or yeah. Channel 27 last night. One of the gentlemen that had gotten shot and killed up at Madison was had mental issues, and they're trying to expand their police force to include more people capable of working with the mental health.
Extra training on how to deal with these
more
people.
More facilities and more agencies equipped to deal with them is the problem. We don't have enough here.
Well, that's what I always say. You know, we used to have, Bosco Bell used to have an area that were for mental health.
Verona had a huge facility right now.
What are our options around here?
If somebody is ED'd, they go to Winnebago.
All the way to Winnebago.
Which is an Oshkosh.
And that's part of my suggestion all along has been, whether you call it a stabilization bed or whatever in this facility, so that we don't have those costs, because that's not just the housing cost, that's the transportation. If you ED somebody over the weekend and you haul them to Winnebago, they got to be back here by 8 o'clock Monday morning for court.
Yep.
You just made two trips to Winnebago for nothing.
Well, actually, the sheriff's department made one, and we likely made the other one, because we often are the ones that they can get called to pick them up, because the sheriff's doesn't go back and get them and bring them back. We do. Usually they end up calling for a volunteer drive.
Look at the cost of the counties.
Yeah. So
we were working on a reciprocity with Dubuque, but that gets ugly too.
Yeah.
Because you're across the state line.
So once you take them across the state line, then you lose jurisdiction over there. So then you can't get them back,
Crawford County uses lacrosse.
So I think that's an opportunity that we need to consider, if we could house, and yeah, we're on the corner of the state that makes it an issue, but I've talked to county board chairs as far away as Rock County, and they bring people here rather than taking them to Winnebago. Well, Monroe's 100 miles away. It's quicker to bring them here than it would be to take them to Winnebago. So.
And that's a mental health person you're holding?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would
concur.
But you've got
to find the right professional that can help treat them, too. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah, finding services. I mean, it's we've had just in the last month or so issues with, people with mental health concerns, and they're really not part of our target group, but we do have a little bit in our mission statement, so they end up here, and then, we keep trying to refer them back to, the places that are designed to serve them, but there's just not anything out there. So it makes it very, very difficult.
So that's the update on the building. Yep. 20 minutes, 30
short and sweet. Okay, thanks much. And if we have no questions.
So the kickoff is Monday, though. The design team meeting is Monday. Okay.
Good morning. Okay.
But even as you have put a design team together, you have to answer some of these other questions, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
They're thinking that they want to meet every 2 to 3 weeks now for the next 2 to 3 months.
Thank goodness, because I don't have enough meetings. It's getting short on my meeting supply, so that'll be good.
I'll bet. All right, we're going to skip over Marcia.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'll double check. I'll have Crystal check on
the advocacy minutes. Reports or activities, which is the ADRC regional board meeting, which we did not have.
Did you not have
you
one?
You had one.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
You had one.
Did we have one?
It was canceled because of
well,
the...
Well, there were two of them together, weren't there?
Yeah, but that was back a month before.
Yeah, you weren't there.
So there was nothing in September.
Right.
Nothing in September.
Okay. No.
I didn't think I...
I just leave it on as a standing item, so...
Well, that's okay. You don't get forgotten then. Okay. Elderfest
coming up next Friday. We have been working very hard to get this off the ground. We look like we're going to have a very full house. For those of you who have never been to Elderfest, you should stop by. It is our senior health fair. It is at the Youth and Ag building out to the fairgrounds. We have, I think, at last count, I think we've got about 40 tables with vendors. From all over the place. We get a number of vendors that provide services to seniors and caregivers of seniors or people who are disabled. So it will be from 9 till 12:30. We'll have a light continental breakfast in the morning, and then we will have lunch will also be served from 10:30 to noon, or 10:30 to 12:30, I think. I don't know, somewhere in there. The lunch is usually very good. It's turkey and dressing sandwiches. It's made by Patty Wells, our cook down in Boscobel. Turkey and dressing sandwiches, I think barbecues, a salad, a bar, probably something else that I'm forgetting. I usually get whatever's left over. I get a little bit at the end of it because I'm usually busy during it. But yeah. But yeah, so we are working very, very hard on that. We do have a presentation from 10 to 11 on safe driving practices. We are going to have someone, a deputy from the Sheriff's Department, just talk about some safe driving tips, but also some of the new laws that have occurred this past year. I know there's one with school buses and the hazardous driving or hazardous weather and a couple other things. So we're going to have them go over that. And then Buzz Marshall from ARP. ARP does a lot of safe driving practices as well. He will also be on hand to talk about some of the services through ARP that might be available to people as well. They provide some safe driving classes for seniors that can give you a break on your health insurance, not on your health insurance. It'd be nice if it gave you a break on your health insurance, but on your car insurance.
Parking in these, like Walmart and Piggly Wiggly and so forth, I just keep thinking I've got to put tires around the outside of my car
it's
before
crazy.
I pull in.
I park far away now, but that's part of my walking scheme,
you know,
too. So.
I know. Sometimes you can't turn your heads to look to see what's back there.
Yeah.
We just back out. One of these days, I'll probably
And everybody just walks and doesn't worry that anybody's going to back out of them, too. That's what I hate, is people just
walk right behind the cars. Yeah.
My car is not equipped with those nice backup cameras that show you that, so I need one of those because I really can't see out my back window very well. But we do get a lot of questions, you know. I wouldn't say a lot, but every year we have people calling us, you know, going, you know, how do we know when it's time to pull somebody's license or get them to quit driving, or how do we start even that, you know, talk? And, you know, we often tell them to interact with their police departments and have that conversation as well, because police departments will do that informally too. So so I think that will be good, a good piece of, and people can just ask. I mean, you know, people always have questions on various things regarding the law and those buggies and those, you know, all the farm vehicles that are out there right now. I did not know that you could have a great big old combine on the four lane yesterday coming out of Madison, but you can. right at rush hour traffic, he pulls out into the four lane, and I'm like, and takes up. I'm like, oh, gosh.
You know, the worst of it is
right
now is
unsafe.
Some of these farmers, years ago, those rules were written, and your farm was right across the road,
yeah,
just down the way.
It's really, yeah,
now
I feel bad.
Driving
for, yeah,
30, 40 miles on these roads, and it does become a hazard.
So there's a lot of hazard on the roads anymore between. So, I mean, it'll give people the opportunity to ask the deputy a question too and find out what the law is and things like that. So I think it will be good. I think anytime we can have the sheriff's department there, people always have a lot of questions for the sheriff department. So I think that will go over quite well.
Well,
so.
The Mennonites is a big problem. Mennonites and the Amish.
With the buggies?
Yeah.
The buggies worry me sometimes in the fog when I'm coming in because I pass a lot of them on my way to work, and they do make me a little nervous in the fog because I don't always, I've been driving on the road for 20 some, you know, plus years, and I still don't always identify what that little red light is in the dark until I'm really quite close to it, and then I'm like, oh my gosh.
You know, we used to see them go by our place on 35 there at, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night, but now you got to remember, it's getting dark by 6:30.
Yeah. I will say,
you know, they are out there. They're getting to where they need to be.
I would say a lot of them have a lot better lighting than they used to. But this morning I came in at 7 o'clock this morning before the sun was up, and I passed many a car without their headlights on.
Yeah.
And the sun wasn't even up yet. And I'm like, you know, turn your lights on. So you're a lot more visible. So, but that will be good. So if you haven't been, please come out. There, like I said, there's a number of different providers out there. There's a lot of giveaways. It's kind of like Halloween. They get
your candy for Halloween.
Get their giveaways. Yes, they get candy. That gets a little bit much sometimes for me. They get a little. Some of them get a little crazy about that, but no, I think we're going to have, you know, we've really got a full house. I think we've got it set up really
flu
well.
Flu shots.
You can get your flu shots. We've got some health screenings out there. Balance. I think somebody's doing walker assessments to check to make sure that your walker is,
fall assessment,
you know, so we've got a number of different activities going on. You can get your blood pressure checked. You can get your flu shot. You can get your cholesterol, fasting cholesterol done if you get there right away in the morning and you haven't eaten. So a number of different things. It should be good. And we will have WGLR out there as well, broadcasting from there. So it's a full day. It's very busy, but it's nice, and people really do enjoy it. We do have buses coming that way as well. So we have one of the best, I'll tell you, and it has nothing to do with me because this started a long, long time ago, but they have branded Elderfest very, very well over the years. You're good. Just grab a chair and we'll get right to you. They have this staff here in past years has branded Elderfest to the point they've got it down just to a T. And it's very well known throughout Grant County. We're one of the highest senior health fairs around. Most people, most of the counties that we've gone to have not, they don't draw near the numbers.
What
that
do you
this
draw? Just a...
In the past, we've drawn over 400. I think last year we were just a little bit under 400. So some of it depends on the weather, too.
Yeah. Oh,
but okay,
all right,
without ado, then I will introduce Marcia Gore. She is our elder benefit specialist for ADRC here. She's been here, I don't even want to say how many years she's been here. She's been
the
here a long time.
Cornerstone out there in the building.
So she's just going to give you a quick overview on the elder benefits program. This is her busy time, so we appreciate her taking the time to step in. And I did explain the computer issues this morning.
Okay.
So
if you see me, I'm still stuck with the computer. I have been here for a long, long time, and I have grown up with this program, so it has changed dramatically over time. I'm a county employee. That's who hires me, fires me, makes sure I'm here on time, I'm honest, and those kind of good things. But I work under the direction of attorneys in Madison, and they specialize in government programs and things like Social Security, SSI, Medicare, medical assistance, Medigap insurance, housing. There's a wide variety of different things that we get involved in. When I'm we refer to ourselves as EBS, so as I say this, that's I'm referring to myself. Our funding for the program primarily comes from the Older Americans Act. It tells us that we cannot charge, but we have to give the clients an opportunity to voice their opinion about the services that we do. And, of course, everything that I do is highly confidential. I have to meet the standards as if I was working in the attorney's office. That means that in a practical sense, nobody else in the office has access to my client's files. And that means that sometimes Lori and I have to be creative about reviewing and working with our clients and making sure that she knows, you know, what she needs to know in order to operate and understand, like, emergency situations or dangerous situations, things of that nature. I can go to her and explain things that's going on a case without giving personal information so that she knows that a client is at a risk of danger or something like that. Certainly, you know, if there was a firearm involved or, you know, somebody threatening suicide or something like that, that there's special rules for that. I cannot under any circumstance refer anything for elder abuse because of the confidentiality requirements. And I find that personally very frustrating sometimes because obviously, you know, if we know that something is going on, we feel like it needs to be investigated. But I have to go by the perspective that if the client gives me permission to do it, then I can seek other resources, but if they don't agree to it, I cannot do it. I don't care how bad it is. I always, always, always err on the side of getting the attorneys involved. I don't make those decisions myself because I feel like that's, you know, serious stuff, and we don't want to ever take any chance about that. Like I say, the program has changed dramatically over the years. You know, the old saying that, you know, what goes around comes around. Well, years ago, we did a lot of Medicare in the beginning years. Grant County was one of the first counties that started the Elder Benefit Specialist Program in the state. We were one of five counties. So we have one of the longest histories in the state with the program. And the way that our program is designed, if you think about it, it's like a wheel. The attorneys are in the center of it, and the spokes of the wheel go out to the counties, and we're lay people out here in the front of everything, helping to coordinate. The other counties use that money from the Older Americans Act frequently by hiring attorney staff. So, of course, their programs don't go as far because their money doesn't go as far, and there's not very much money to begin with anyway.
We should be specific in that the funding is Older Americans Act. It's also tax levy. So
definitely.
There is
most
tax
definitely.
Levy put into that.
Yes, most definitely. It's Older Americans Act. That's the rules that I have to follow, but it's state, county, donations. You know, there's others. We're also funded by something that's called the SHIP funds, and that stands for State Health Insurance Assistance Program. That's Medicare dollars that come from the feds down to the state, down to us. And as a SHIP counselor, we are responsible for solving Medicare problems and, you know, helping people learn as much as they can how to protect themselves and make wise decisions when it comes to selecting anything to do with Medicare. We go all the way from explaining what a benefit is, this is what Medicare is, this is what Medicaid is, etc., to presenting cases before administrative law judges. And as soon as I say that, I do everything humanly possible to avoid that stuff because it's quite intense. And we want to lower that stress on that individual as much as possible. So I do a lot of negotiating behind the scenes, quietly talking to providers or other agencies, trying to resolve issues so that we don't have to access that legal part of the system. the administrative law judge level, there's other steps below that that are not quite as intense. And it's definitely my preference to try to resolve something without having to go to that extent. However, we have a long history of doing what needs to happen, and that includes, at sometimes it can include going before an administrative law judge hearing against the county, and I might as well put it the way that it is. That's not a pleasant thing. I don't know that we've had to do that while that's you've been here. But it talk about stress for the director and myself. That's quite uncomfortable to go to your employer and speak against what the employer has done. But I'm an advocate, and that's my job, is to try to act in behalf of those individuals. I don't avoid it if it has to be done. Obviously, the attorneys are involved. They give us direction, a lot of training. We go almost every other month for training of one sort or another, and we have many, many webcasts in between times. Any time that I sense that there's the slightest question about what could be done or should be done or am I missing something, then I always contact the attorneys. They know, I don't want to say day by day, but they definitely know very frequently what I'm doing and what's going on. I want to make sure that the stuff that I can't talk to Lori in regard to, that somebody, you know, has that information, and that I'm not just out here, you know, flinging mud myself. Lori asked me to talk about what we have done as far as the Medicare Part D is concerned. A few years before the Medicare Part D was developed and designed at the federal level, the state of Wisconsin had the Wisconsin Senior Care Program, which is prescription drug coverage here in the state of Wisconsin. It has four levels of coverage. It's very cut and dried. I can explain that in probably 10 minutes, 15 minutes tops, do the application, get them on their way. They're happy as a lark. No problem. So when we got word that the feds had passed the law to start the Medicare Part D program, within days, the attorneys had us in to start doing the training. There were a few steps before the full-blown program started, and we went through all of those phases to get it up and running, and the Part D portion of it has actually been with us since 2006. Throughout that time, we have had a wide variety of staffing and volunteer changes and evolutions as we go forward, trying to find, you know, the best way that we can help as many people as possible with the least cost.
Keep making it leaner.
That's right. Boy, we just really, really, that's a constant thing for us, to be able to see how many more people can we serve with less. And, we really faithfully believe in that. We've had the opportunity, at one point we had 8 volunteers. The volunteers, by and large, have a tendency to say, hey, you know, you need to pay me to do this. This is way too much work for a volunteer. So the volunteer part doesn't always work. However, when I mentioned the SHIP program, in other states, all of those other states use only volunteers. The state of Wisconsin doesn't have the core support for a volunteer program that's connected with our SHIP program. And therefore, with the Medicare Part D, we don't have that body of volunteers that are thoroughly trained and all set and ready to go. So here in the state of Wisconsin, we use the elder benefit specialist. And, of course, the disability benefit specialist also does the Medicare Part D for people under the age of 60. Each year, those contracts change, and that's something that most people don't understand about Medicare Part D. In our common sense way of thinking about things, we think of any type of insurance that we can do our shopping, do our homework, and then it's just going to automatically roll over, and, you know, you keep your car insurance for several years, and you might go down and you check it out. You might do the same thing with your house insurance, those kind of things. But we tend to stay with the same company and sort of trust that agent to tweak it the way that it needs to happen. Medicare Part D is not like that, nor is Medicare Part C. Medicare Part C is health coverage that takes the place of Medicare Part A and Part B of Medicare. The upfront cost for a Medicare Advantage, a Medicare Part C plan, is much, much, much lower than it is under a Medigap policy. And we have many, many people who have been on, older people, I'm talking like 80 and older, that have been on Medicare for a number of years, and they have a Medicare supplement, and those supplements could easily be $250 a month, and they're living on, you know, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $1,500. So that cost for that Medicare supplements, as a person ages, automatically usually gets harder and harder and harder for them to be able to afford. And when they see an ad, or they get, you know, somebody down the street says, oh, you can save some money, you don't have to do that. A Medicare Advantage plan can have a premium as low as zero. Well, when you're struggling for money and you're paying $200 or $250 a month and you're counting out your pennies to be able to buy your groceries, that's very enticing to go to a Medicare Advantage plan. The problem with that is that those contracts change every year for the C and the D both. That means that your budget is no longer set up to be able to pay and afford that premium that you used to pay for the Medicare supplement. And you no longer have it because you give it up to take a Medicare Advantage plan. Some of the Medicare Advantage plans include Medicare Part D and some don't. So everything is a little bit different. We really try hard to educate people, everybody that comes in throughout the year, to tell them when it comes time in the fall for the during the open annual enrollment period, make sure that you check it because those contracts change and invariably goes across their head until they face a real disaster with the drug cost. We counted up, and I think, if I remember right, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking that when we looked at it last year, we did roughly about 385 people during the Medicare Part D season. Now, that would not have included any Medicare Advantage people, and it would not have included anybody that was just starting Medicare. It would have just been drug, either Part D or a senior care. In the past, we have varied, like I said, with the volunteers. We've had some years that we had as many as two part-time paid staff to come in and help. We no longer have those monies to do that, and we don't have that support this year. So we have approximately 168 slots that will be available for actual appointments. Now, we do them, the review, as in-person appointments. People come in with their drug list, and we do it. Or we'll do it by mail. We'll do the paperwork, send the printed list out to people, have them look at it, then they can call Medicare. Nobody wants to call Medicare. Nobody wants to do it on the computer themselves because either they don't do a computer or they're afraid of it, even if they do computer. So there's a lot of reluctance to doing it by mail themselves. And of course, as the younger people begin to come up, we're trying every client, we try to encourage them. This is easy, you can do this, you know, here's how to do it, you know, we'll help you. You know, we can be on our phone with them at home on their computer and their phone and walk them through the first time. Some people we can get to the point where they'll do it, others it's just never ever going to happen. I don't care what it is. I have one professional group of individuals that, you know, we could buy them all brand new computers and they will never do it. And they just tend to be very difficult people to get through that evaluation process. They tend to ask a lot of questions, we know that if we have that particular type of profession, that we need to set a longer appointment time, because they're going to use that time whether we have it available or not. That's just the nature of it. We did a lot by mail last year, and Lynn and I both encourage people to do it, and we encourage them to call us back if they have questions.
Do you want to explain just how that happens by mail, that they send in their drug list?
Sure. Maybe I'll back up one step further. When a client calls in the past, because we had this extra staff, we had people who had gone through the training for Medicare Part D and Medicare Advantage and Medigap and Medicare in general. They had gone through like a full day of training, so they knew and understood the dynamics, the rules, and the basic formats for all of this type of coverage. And they would, I gave them a list of questions. You know, you ask this, you know, if this happens, here's what to do, and sort of did a lot of role-playing with them. In the past, that's always been a problem because people would call in so fast that our staff would not have time to be able to answer the phone physically before the next call would be coming in. So we would end up with a backlog. Frank would call at 10 o'clock, and then by 2 o'clock, if somebody hadn't turned around and called them back, well, then Frank's back on the phone again, and it's just sort of like a nasty, vicious circle. And, of course, obviously that has a huge impact on the rest of the staff in the office. And as we had that initial phone call conversation with them, we were able to begin to get enough information so we knew and understood what their problems were, how much time it was going to take us, what kind of an appointment. We would encourage them to do it by mail, which would include them mailing a drug list to us or having the pharmacy fax it to us. And then we would enter their drugs and their personal information into the Medicare.gov website. They have a tool that's called the Plan Finder tool. And when you put your drugs in there, then it will consider all of the 24 plans for the next year and put them, the results, in order from the least expensive to the most expensive. Then we can print that out, pop it in the mail to them. They can look at it, and if they can succeed to do it, then they can certainly make that decision themselves and call Medicare. And that's what we try to encourage people to do all the time.
And if they don't see anything wrong with their current plan, they can just keep it.
Many, which Medicare.gov.
Medicare.gov. Mm-hmm. We have written instructions that we've always given out. We've done them, for years, so that when we have somebody that we identify as a computer person, that, they can take that, set it by their computer, and do this all themselves. But we will do it for them if they're not a computer person and get it in the paper format and mail it to them. Then we expect them to call 1-800-MEDICARE and actually do the enrollment. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We're running into problems this year, like I said, because the budget doesn't allow us to hire that element to get the extra help. Lori and I talked, and I knew that Lynn and I, the phone calls have always been the major problem because of this back and forth and back and forth. And, of course, if Lynn and I are with clients, there's no way we can take those phone calls. So we're trying for the first time this year to have the front desk make the appointments. And we're all growing through it. Until you do something, sometimes you just don't know for sure what kind of headaches you're going to evolve. Yesterday was our first complete let's go day for the season. And it started out just about as bad as you could even humanly begin to discuss. It was a total nightmare. The computer would not work at all. The Medicare.gov throughout the summer throughout the year, really, but intensely during the summer, they make a lot of changes to the website. And those are improvements, improvements that we as counselors ask for and improvements. But, of course, as with any computer, you know, that tweaking, you have to iron out the bugs the first part of the season. We first had problems with that, got that all done, and then the server went down. And we were off with no computer for, I don't know, 45 minutes or an hour. In the meantime, I had to send the client home, so the client's going to have to end up coming back. We did get to the point where we could function after that, and we just had a lot of things that didn't go right yesterday. So today's a bad day for me to come in. I almost hated to come to work today. But so far this
morning...
Why
are computers worked fine this morning?
Well...
No, they did not.
No, they didn't. But remember over
Hence
here...
Hence another reason we need a different
On the
place
one hand, it's the Medicare computer that has the kinks,
yes,
which we can't do anything about. And we have a formal process to submit any problems. And, I mean, we have to know what server number, we have to, it's just real
intense. And that's been typical of CMS every year since.
Oh, yes. So. It's. I mean, this is just all the time. Okay. It's nothing new to this year.
I think we
And
should
then over here we have
our
us.
Own issues. But we don't need to go into those because they're already aware
you are,
of those.
You know so. That, you know. But
I'm going to stop you there and see if anybody has any questions as far as elder benefits, as far as the things that... There are other people that do Part D, as Marcia said, too. Some pharmacies are doing Part D. Some health insurance agencies also do Part D. And then you can call the Medicare hotline and the Medigap hotline.
The Medigap hotline is for insurance. The Medicare Part D hotlines...
Is the hotline.
The problem is that the hotlines are almost too full now as well. So I'm really concerned about making referrals to them at this point because, you know, that's a bad referral if we already know that they're not, that they're beyond functioning.
I think the good news for us, though, is the baby boomers are now aging into this population. They are more computer literate. They're more able to do things, you know. It's still our, you know, our older generations that are going to struggle with that because they didn't have those. And so,
but you know, I was just at the state convention for the auxiliary, and the ABRC gave us a basket because I had to do the raffle for
right.
the state. And I will tell you, one breakout session was on Medicare and the ADRCs. And I had a young lady come up to me, and she says, I noticed you have a basket from the ADRC. And I just learned all about it. My mother is going to turn 65. We didn't know where to go, and I was able to say to her, yep, right there it is.
Right.
You go in, and those people are going to help you. So that was a person
Fabulous.
Younger than I who's trying to help their mother.
Yeah,
and
yeah, that doesn't know.
The mother was just
either.
In a panic. She says, I don't know where to go with all this information.
Yeah, it's
you
lot.
Know, and she says, you mean it's free?
Well, and our staff is, I think, I cannot compliment them enough. When those people call and they're upset and they're scared and they don't have a clue, our staff is, I think, the best of the bunch of being able to help the person calm down enough to be able to say, okay, I can do this. It's just a matter of, you know,
she
taking
wasn't,
one
this
step.
This is the daughter who wasn't aware of the
Oh, yeah.
You know, and here going to try. She said, I didn't even know where to start.
And that's part of, like, our senior health fair. People think it's because ADRC is different than, say, your social services programs, which are, which cost, you know, in theory, cost taxpayers money. They do run preventative programs, too, so I don't want to go there entirely. But ADRC is a little different because while, yes, we are providing these services and they are free of charge, when we provide services correctly and do, you know, keep people out of long-term care or keep people out of the nursing homes, I mean, we're actually saving Medicaid dollars in the long run. So we are set up a little differently in terms of our marketing. It's not something that most social service or human services departments do, and counties are usually somewhat uncomfortable with the amount of materials that we sometimes put out there as an ADRC. But it is to get that word out because we want people to know us before they need us. That's kind of the whole thing is, you know, we can save you some time and money and hopefully not have a family in crisis then that are needing to somehow, you know,
pull things out of the air.
Right, or, at, you know, access nursing home services before they need to. If we can get services set up at home ahead of time, people can often stay in their homes many, many more years before they need to access a nursing home.
To give you an example, yesterday one of the gentlemen that came in, all he wanted was for us to look at his Medicare Part D plan because he was spending a lot of money and he was not taking one of his meds. And to make a long story short, before we get done, I think that he will actually be a good candidate for a certain type of Medicaid that will allow him to take that medication. He has about 3 years to live from what the doctors have told him. And he's a very young man. He's like 61, something like that. Had no idea that he could even begin to look at that as, you know, that there was any answer to do that. You mentioned the crisis. I don't like to call it a crisis because this is normal, but two of the events this year that are complicating the normal season is the retiree group for the county. You know, we've got people who are going to insurance people. We've got people coming out here. We've got people, you know, spread out all over everywhere because their policy is being terminated. That's not unusual at all. We see it happen, you know, frequently. And we also have 133 people in the northern part of the county that have been enrolled in senior preferred under the Gunderson plan. Typically, that would be Blue River, Boscobel, Muscogee, Woodman, a little bit of Prairie, you know, that corner over there. And anybody that has that senior preferred Medicare Advantage plan, some with and some without the drug coverage, they're losing all of their health coverage. Now, what happens in that situation is because it's terminated, they automatically, January 1, will go back to original Medicare. But then that means that they have no secondary coverage. So we have a lot of people on that end of the county. If any of you are, you know, from that end of the county, don't be surprised if you get calls because they are scared. We've set up a discussion the 31st of October to help them understand what's happening and what their options are. And again, that goes back to that person that I was talking about before that, you know, had this Medigap policy and then adjusted their budget down to, you know, a very low premium. Now they have what's called guarantee issue to get into a Medicare supplement, but they no longer have the money set aside to be in their budget is not going to allow it. We have two companies that have plans similar to that. So we have a chunk of people that, you know, we're not to the crisis point yet, but I think we will definitely reach that point probably mid-November. And, yeah, you know, we're going to do the best that we can, but we have limited resources. And the sad thing about it is yes, we can refer them to the state office and to the hotlines, but they're full too this time of year. So, you know, those 130, the county retirees, we've got people that, from the county that will help. Dawn is excellent, you know, about answering questions and helping. And so are the other insurance companies as far as that is. But these other people, these other 133, they're out there by themselves. And many of them are very, very frail. You know, one of the men that came in last week, oh, he could barely hear and he could barely walk down the hall. And, you know, how he got here safely, I can't tell you. So, you know, we're not to a crisis yet with that, but, you know, I'm very, very concerned about it. Any questions?
Yeah, Marcia, in 1985, 86, when you started, what were the issues then?
Oh, that's interesting. The majority of my day was spent doing something called shoebox cases. And a shoebox case is literally people coming in with shoeboxes full of bills and Medicare statements and explanation of benefits from insurance companies. And many times they would come in with two or three Dick's bags full of all this mail. And I was known for literally sitting on the floor and going through and making piles and piles and piles. And you remember. And it was not unusual at all for, at that point in time, every individual had to file their own secondary claim with their insurance company because it was not required for the provider to do that. Now it is automatic, generally. So these shoebox cases, it wasn't unusual for me to have all kinds of papers, unmentionables that I don't even want to go into, and we would put that into a semblance of order and tell them who to pay, and then from that we would discover, oh, you can't pay this bill because you don't have enough money, and you should be on Medicaid, or you should be on food share, or you should be on whatever. We have always used senior care of the Medicare Part D, those shoebox cases, as an avenue to be able to identify issues for people. Those shoebox cases went away as time went on because the laws changed. And as a clinic would file the Medicare claim, it would go from the clinic to the Medicare, then it would bounce over into the insurance company and then back to the individual. So all of that was automatically taken care of. So it sort of, left. We rarely had. We would have shoebox cases for employer group plans maybe and some other things. Then we've had Medicare Advantage Part C plans for probably 6 or 8 years here in Grant County. And one of the first shoebox cases that I had out of after those years of things being better was a Medicare Advantage plan, and the man owed $52,000. He didn't no more know that he owed that money and than anything. He had no clue. He had canceled a very good, affordable Medicare supplement plan because this Medicare Advantage plan had a zero premium. And, we worked through them, we negotiated, we saved him a lot of money. I mean, like $25,000, $30,000 it was. So we got that reduced. But, we weigh that pros and cons, and we don't ask for a reduction for the individual unless we know that they truly do not have the money. I mean, if somebody's sitting on $50,000, then they need to pay that. We don't want them to go down to zero, but so, yeah, big changes.
The intent was always being fulfilled. So many times I see when an agency is formed in the government, and here was the intent, and then there's always the issues come up and the undesired consequences,
and derailed.
And it always derails, and it ends up being a debacle. So, mm-hmm. But in this case, it's always been.
Oh yes, always been to be an advocate.
Advocate of the mm-hmm. age and mm-hmm. provide the resources to.
Right, to make that connection. What we find is that people, especially older people that are frail. Either they don't know that they have the right to ask the question. If they do, they don't know who to go to. And Lori described it perfectly. It always amazes us that, here we are, and we do all of this publicity, and then people come in and say, I didn't know you were here. And, it's like until it affects them personally, then they don't really know to. But the Elder Benefit Specialist Program in the state of Wisconsin is looked at as a very highly regarded program from the rest of the nation. So,
well, I hope you don't have any plans to retire
soon. Well, I always wonder when they reduce a bill. When they reduce a bill, mm-hmm. who
pays it?
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But,
and that's why when I have a client, I don't automatically just say, oh, sure, I'll go get it written off. I'm not going to do that. If I know that you've got the money, and I check to make sure that you don't have the money, I don't want you to go down to zero, but I want you to understand. And that education piece, to me, is as important as the end of result, because I want them to start making good decisions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that goes back to saying, you know, the basics of Medicare and that sort of thing. Education is just extremely important, because I don't care if you've got Medicare or Social Security, if you mess it up, you know, it doesn't do you any good. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time, you know, and I'm not a very good artist, but, you know, I do a lot of, you know, here it is, here's what it looks like. And they see me grow that poor picture to be able to identify, and then they can understand it many times.
You have to be so careful of this Medicare Advantage plan.
Yes, very much so.
You know, I've heard different ones say, oh, I've got the Medicare Advantage plan. I don't pay much. Well, if they go to the doctor much during the year,
yes,
they'd be much better off on Medicare.
Their own Medicare. That is their Medicare.
Yeah, I know
what
it is.
What is missing is over here on the original Medicare, you have Part A and Part B here, and you buy a private mm-hmm. insurance policy to plug those holes. Under Medicare Advantage, you only have this. Mm-hmm. You don't have that other insurance. And, you know, when you've got a Medicare supplement, you're paying up front. Whether you get sick or not, you're paying that monthly premium every month. If you have a Medicare Advantage plan, there's typically an out-of-pocket expense up to, I believe it's like $6,700 that you could have to pay now. Now, that's an improvement from what it started out being. But, you know, if you're changing thinking, oh, gee, I'm going to have a zero premium or a $60 premium or a $100 and whatever premium, and then you have to pay $6,000, yeah. You don't have $6,000, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
And believe me, the collectors, you know, rightfully so, and I totally support it and understand, the medical providers will not tolerate people not paying their bills. They can't in today's world. So
they don't even tolerate when they're not the ones, when they don't get the bills right. Me and I just had that conversation.
Yes, we did. We both got threatened.
Gunderson is habit of not getting their bills correct, and then they call you because you haven't paid their bill, and it's like, because you don't have it right yet.
Any other questions or anything? Feel free to call if you ever have any questions, or, you know, if there's something that you want me to improve or change, I'm happy to.
One of the things, we're at a state meeting, I'll just say this real briefly, is that GWAR, who is our AAA, it's the agency that receives the Older Americans Act funding and then oversees all of the counties except for Dane and Milwaukee. And one of the things that they're looking at is, as you've heard from the ADRC side business plan, well, GWAR is also looking at a business design development center. And selling our services, and we already do that somewhat in terms of transportation and home-delivered meals, but EBS services are also one of the services they are looking now, because so many, besides people who just need us for their, you know, insurance reasons, a fair amount of professionals often call just to get Marcia's opinion on something or an EBS's opinion on something, so... there's talk of providing Medicare 101 presentations to certain groups of people that a company will actually pay for that instead of just us offering it for free all the time. So that's some of the things that they're looking at in the future as well, is rather than just providing those services to, you know, people that can, to companies that can afford to pay for them, instead of providing them for free, that they would actually purchase some of those. So,
I mean, it's just invaluable.
And then that, in turn, would then could be put back into the EBS program to maybe possibly grow it and provide to those who could not.
Yeah.
afford it.
And I feel
it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but
well, but I support that, and the reason I do is because going back to that Older Americans Act, they want us to focus on the people that really need it
right
the most. However, we don't practice that. You know, we have no mechanism to be able to say, oh, well, you've got $500,000 in the bank. You can afford to pay somebody to do that. So if we could charge them even a sliding fee scale or something, that would make sense to for us to be able to do
and
that.
And I'm not sure that's the way it'll go for seniors. Oh, I think it's more like for an employer wanting you to come in and give a Medicare presentation to their retirees that are coming up or, like, say, to the county. So,
but I think you do have to start thinking about planning ahead for that.
Well, the decisions that you folks have just made, and as you're in the process of finishing, I don't know where you're at with it, with the budget right now, is what is going to happen a year from now when I go and sit down with Lori and say, how are we going to do it in 2017?
Yeah. And we've seen a reduction in funding. So mm-hmm. we used to get what was called MIPA funding. We have not been able to access that. Our SHIP funding has gone down. We don't know how that's going to be allocated.
MA reimbursement is almost non-existent right now because when those come in, if they're handled before they come into our program, then it gets counted someplace else, not in our program. So, it's definitely that funding is, and yes, we could use volunteers, but we have to realize that there's a cost to training those volunteers and supporting them. When we had the volunteers, they really wanted my attention. And that's really hard to do when you've got 8 appointments in a day.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty complicated for a volunteer to take over and have a real comfort level with
it.
I mean, I've been here 3 years. I have no comfort level with it whatsoever.
She wants
I just go ask her. I don't. I mean, it is. It's very, unless you're doing it on a daily basis, it's.
Well, and we always tell all of the new ABS, don't plan on understanding this for at least 3 to 6 years. Because it makes sense. When you talk to somebody from Social Security, all they're learning is Social Security. If you talk to somebody from Department of Social Services, they're learning those programs, but they're not looking at Social Security. The Elder Benefit Specialist is learning all of these agencies. Now, thank goodness we've got the supports and the background and the expertise behind us that we can access. We can't do it without that background and the understanding from, the directors and the local people that, this is a weird program.
So how many elderly benefit specialists do we have?
We have one.
Do all ADRCs have elderly?
Every county is required to have
one. It's the aging side of it that houses the elder benefit specialist. The ADRCs have the disability benefit specialist. At those times, as ADRCs and aging units integrate, that may look different, but for right now, they're two separate funding sources. So
we do have.
I would say most counties probably do have an elder benefit specialist.
Yes, as far as I know, every county is required by state law to have at least one full-time equivalent EBS. Sauk County has 1.5. Until just recently, Iowa County had 1.5. So there's many counties that have more.
Yeah,
and
Iowa
there's
County
also,
only had one for a brief time.
Well, no, they've had it.
That was paid for out of ADRC, though.
In the end, but not. I mean, they've had a 1.5 position since probably 1990.
So as all your people are aging, I mean, it's like
we asked when I came here.
Go that way, right?
Yeah, we asked in 2014 to have some of our ADRC budget, but if we could add on to an EBS, and at that time the answer was no from the state. So we're hoping at some point that we can. Right now with our disability benefit specialist, who is very overwhelmed with the amount coming in too, we have a higher than average there too. We've been able to, when Lafayette gets theirs on board, we will have that DBS disability benefit specialist coming over here a couple of days of work to work with that caseload. That's the same thing we'd like to see for EBS at some point, is that ability to expand out to different counties, but that's different funding sources, and that funding source, the OAA program funding sources, are not regional. They are specific to the county. Mm-hmm. So obviously counties aren't going to just say, hey, yeah, let's let our employee go over and work for another
And we
county.
Do have so. Two counties that have volunteered to come one day, so we've got
yes.
2 days. We don't have all the particulars worked out just simply because I haven't physically had time to work on it. But they have volunteered to come over and help us. It's, you know, irreplaceable to think that somebody that's fully trained is willing to come and help us.
And that may be a yeah. one-day thing where people mm-hmm. could come in, meet with an elder benefit specialist quickly, do the plan finder,
mm-hmm. move on,
and just very quickly in a day. So
and
it's
going to
probably
like
be people that are going to not have a lot of issues
mm-hmm.
with
right,
it.
Right, right. And if it were to develop into something with other related issues, the other related issues would be left here and we would finish it or clean it up. But that immediate need to do the Medicare Part D.
We
also have a part-time, what do you call it, part-time temporary? No?
LT. Well, she's technically an LT, but I don't get that. She works all
year. Limited time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a limited time person who does mostly the database entry
right.
stuff for Marcia to free up Marcia's time. So, and that's a luxury that a lot of counties haven't always had. So,
but
we are lucky to
we
do
are fudging
that.
The line and having her help with D. So don't tell anybody. We're just we're gonna make it work. So, let me know if you have any questions. So,
thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Any questions at all on that? Mm-hmm. I'm a boy standing for me. Very important person.
Yeah. When you lose it, you lose the salary.
Yeah, yeah. She really does know.
Okay, transportation and public hearing.
We'll be having that, provided that works for one other thing, on November 14th at 3:30 p.m. That is, I have to have a public hearing before submission of the 8521 grant in December. The board did approve submitting both transportation grants, so that's why the public hearing is on there. So we just have to move ahead with that. We aren't making any major changes to that 8521 grant, but they still require us to hold a public hearing. So just to see.
We'll go on to number 9 then, approval of vouchers.
Is this it?
No, they have the rest.
Okay.
That was the one I was struggling to
get
this
look
morning.
In my, I
couldn't
pull up
missing?
My packet.
I have to run them a couple days ahead, and if they don't go, they don't
I
go.
I had to add on because I couldn't get mine in my reports this morning either with our computer issues. So I don't think we have anything.
Any questions on the vouchers?
No, they're pretty straightforward. Yep. The usuals. I don't think I saw too many transportation ones in there.
There are no questions. Anybody want to make a motion to approve the vouchers?
I move that we approve the vouchers.
There, a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion passed. Financial report.
I don't think so. Other than our service management, I talked to Nancy about this a couple of times, and it's basically because we've got some staff time going into service management that we had allocated to nutrition. However, Nancy's been a little busy with the budget and the building updates, so I don't know if we're going to get that switch made before the end of the year. Technically, it's just whether levy goes into service management or NPE. It doesn't cost any difference in the amount of time and money, and service management can handle it. It can go in either category. So I'm not sure she's going to be able to make that switch before the end of the year. So we might be a little different there, but I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
Is this the time to ask a question about where are the changes with health insurance? Is this the time or not?
You can. We definitely are going to see that if you looked at when you looked at the 2017 budget, that was where you saw the health insurance line items. And you will see an increase in those line items from this budget. However, you would have seen a bigger increase when we started at the beginning of the budget period with health insurance. We had a lot more money being allocated. It was costing a lot more money for employer and employees. The county did work very closely with the insurance companies to try to come up with some ways to alleviate that cost. And I think we ended up, what did we end up at, Bob, at about 11% versus about 17 or 18% to begin with?
It was 11.18 for Dean and 10.6 or something like that.
Right. So one of the things that you heard Marcia say was retirees not being able to carry on the health insurance plans here is one of the things that the county has done to alleviate some of the expense of the health insurance, although I think that's not a high cost. It is still a cost.
You won't see the return right away.
Right.
That return will be.
It'll be down the road. And that's what we're trying to look at. You will see employees are going to incur some more expenses to the health insurance plans. The county is going to pick up the least expensive. They will pay as far as the least expensive plan. So I have Dean. We have a choice of Dean and Medical Associates. So my Dean health plan right now actually is more expensive than the Medical Associates. So in terms of like mine, if I want to stay with Dean, it's going to cost me about $1,000 extra for the year. If I choose to stay with that, if I choose to go with the county, if I choose to go with the lower one for my category, then it will be Medical Associates, and I'll pay a little less. So they have some of those costs will be passed on to the employee if they want the more expensive plan for whatever reason. So,
okay.
We also, I'm trying to think. Gosh, we've had so many conversations on this, but. Drug coverage. That was the one that I was trying to think of. The drug coverage did go up. The copays also went up. They were 10 and 30, and went up to 15 and 45 for employees paying copays. So again, that cost was passed on to alleviate the cost in health insurance too. And while that's been really, that always is a awful thing for employees to hear, and they don't like it, and none of these do. I mean, it's kind of what the world's been dealing with for quite a few years. So,
what plan is that for, Dean? Or
we have Medical Associates and Dean, so it's for either of them.
It's the same for both.
Yeah. So some of those are being passed on. So yes, we're still seeing. We are still seeing. Insurance costs increasing, but the other thing is employees working under 30 hours will not be eligible for health insurance as well.
Oh, you have to do 30 hours.
Yeah.
So is 30 hours considered full-time?
Yes, I think it is.
So no part-time employee would get health insurance?
The ones that have it now will be grandfathered in. It will be moving forward.
Okay.
And that's something I think like some of our partnering counties that we have within ADRC region have already done that. Greene County said they did that several years ago. I think Iowa County has also done it. So it's not unusual.
Well, I've heard 20%. I'm surprised at the 30%.
The 30 hours.
Yeah, 30 hours, yeah. Right.
So
20 hours.
I think before it was 24.
24.
I
believe.
Mm-hmm. Right in there.
So, yeah, I mean, those are all
changes that have to be made.
Things that make it very difficult, but and in turn that makes it difficult then to attract staff too. So it's all kind of interrelated and makes it, people look a lot more at their benefit plans now when they get on board than they do their wages sometimes, because if you add your benefit plan onto your wages, it costs a lot. Yep. So
any questions on the financial report? Hearing none, someone want to make a motion to approve the financial report?
Also move. I'll second it.
right. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion passed. Report from the ADRC. Director's report.
I couldn't do anything with my director's report this morning because I didn't have computers, so I'm opting to go
Punt?
Live with it. Yeah, Punt? Here is the... I did manage to run off the... You didn't have the bus and the taxi program statistics on your report because I was still working on them for the quarter to get those done. So there are those. So I jotted down notes here because I didn't have any computers this morning. So a few things. 5311 grant was submitted. The 5311 grant is for taxi programs, the taxi in Boscobel, Fenimore, and Lancaster, as well as the one in Dodgeville. I would like to, I have had a conversation with Bob, and I think Bob and I will probably be talking to Dodgeville and or Iowa County. We did talk with them prior when we were looking for a taxi driver. You know, they really want the taxi over there. And I think we just need to figure out what's a good fit for everybody involved. But because of that 5311 grant coming so quickly, Iowa County, according to DOT, would not have the ability to get those funds in time for 2017, and neither would Dodgeville. So I think if we want to look at some point in time of having the taxi program in Iowa County become part of Iowa County, that's something we've got to foreshadow out maybe a year or two. So we'll probably have some conversations with the Dodgeville mayor and human services over there too to see how that goes. That being said, we do have a taxi driver in Iowa County hired, so that makes my life a little bit more difficult or a little better because we're not trying to find somebody to cover those services. So we did hire Phil Alm from Fenimore to provide services over there, drive our taxis. So that's good news. But I do think that is something that we still need to figure out. And I need to really sit down and figure out if it's a financial, if it benefits us financially anyway to have that. I think at the time, in order to get the taxi services going, having that regional aspect to it was probably more attractive to the DOT and probably got the funding. Whether that's still the case or not, that's what I need to find out. So I will be trying to look into that, but I think we're going to have to push, you know, that's going to have to be, if we decide that that needs to go to someone else, then we have to be very thoughtful in how we do that because of the time periods and the reimbursements. So. Elder Fest I've talked about, Nutrition Council met, and right now I've just lost all my train of thought on Nutrition Council, so they have met. I don't know what we discussed. I just completely lost it there. They will be going out and doing some site visits as well, as they do every year. I did meet with a couple members from the basketball group. We'd gotten some donations in. We'd gotten a $1,000 donation into the Boscobel for home-delivered meals. And Boscobel's a little tricky because they're also, the meal site is in the senior center, and the employee is both the senior center director for the city and our meal site director for the county. So they have a senior center event coming up that they thought maybe some of that donation money should go for that. So I had to kind of explain to them, you know, how donations work. When it's a donation to our program, to the home-delivered meals, that needs to go into program income as defined by the law. So we're going to spend a little more time, I think, at the next Nutrition Council looking at the budget. That's not something that they deal with. That's something you guys deal with. But I think I'm going to go over the budget with them a little bit and how we treat donations as they come in, that they're not just, you know, they're not just free money to be spent. If a family designates that they want something to go, you know, for a particular thing, most of the time we would ask them to actually go out and physically purchase that and then bring it to us. Because it's essentially, if it's a check, it has to go into our general program income and cover the costs, you know, towards the program. So
anything there with X signs or
have you? I've kind of just maintained a distance from Eckstein from a little bit. I'd like to give them a little bit of a cooling off period from our fund requests. And part of that is because they've got a new financial person there who had a lot of concerns with that last donation. So I will ask them probably in the future for some money, but I want it to be very, very specific and very easily tracked as opposed to our past grants there. My thought down the line here is as we start looking at meal sites and who should stay open and, you know, that would be an opportunity to ask them for support of, say, maybe the Cassville meal site would be my thought. I would think that there would be good reason for them to maybe provide some money to keep that meal site open if possible. Moving on, ADRC is spending a lot of time writing a business plan. So that's Mary and Meritzer and the managers. Again, they're looking at coming up with a cost per customer, a cost per contact, that type of thing, so that we can know our expenses, looking at creating some marketing plans, looking at, again, how to increase our customer base. However, we're being very careful with that because as they want us to increase their customer base, they have not increased our funding in several years. The funding has remained flat. So while, yes, we want to get more efficient and do more things lean and do what we can, there are just certain things that, you know, aren't going to happen unless they provide funding to do that. You know, we can only serve, as Marcia said, even with, you know, with staff on hand, but this is a big county, so we can only serve so many people. So if they want us to provide more, then they have to look at as to how they're going to fund that as well. So some of that's being put into that business plan as well. GWAR, I'm working on end-of-year reports for GWAR. GWAR is the Greater Wisconsin Area on Aging Resources, and all their program year things end on September 30th. So we have to have all of those reports done by mid-November. So I'm going through all of that, all of our home-delivered meals, all of our congregate. We have to make sure that we have demographics on all of those people, and invariably we have people that we don't, and we get a 10% leeway. So I've got to go sure. I'm meeting with GWAR on the 21st to go over those reports, and I'd like those to be good before I meet with them instead of them coming and saying, you still got some work to do. Invariably, Carrie will find something that I have missed on those reports, but because she knows the database a little better than I do. But I'm trying to get those real good. We met with GWAR yesterday, as all the aging units meet with them on a quarterly basis. And their big talk yesterday was also on this business development center. So we're getting it from both sides, ADRC and GWAR. They're looking for a business development coordinator to start to figure out how we can, again, sell services to businesses, basically. And it would not be sliding fee scales to customers. It would be selling our services to business. MCOs, healthcare organizations, things like that. There has been some interest by some of the bigger healthcare providers, say the deans, the medical associates, that type of thing, in say purchasing a stepping on class. They might identify a number of participants that have either falls or maybe diabetes prevention, and they could notify those participants that they could provide them with a class on diabetes. And we could provide that class then for a cost. It would still allow us to provide free ones to the community services, but that would be something that they would purchase. So that being said, there is a rule within the Centers for Medicaid Services right now that said ADRCs need to be careful and not have any conflict of interest with these other agencies. And it's been sort of an unenforced rule. Because if you look around the state right now, most of your aging programs have contracts with the MCOs for home-delivered meals and transportation. And if you read that CMS rule, we could be out of compliance with that. The GWAR, Bob Kellerman, who is the CEO for GWAR, and Carrie Mulkey, who is the head of the bureau that oversees us, neither one of them seem to be terribly concerned with that rule. They're trying to get more clarification on it. They don't seem to think it's going to be a problem for the future, so they continue to both focus on these business aspects, and yet almost every time that's the concern from us, is we want to know where that rule is at, because if we're going to be out of compliance, that could cost our county a lot of money if we can no longer charge full cost for meals for MCOs and transportation. That's where we make some money back, because we can charge an administrative fee for that to set those up. That offsets some of our costs where we don't charge a over 60 person the full cost. We can do that with the MCOs and charge a little bit more. So it helps offset our costs. So if that would come down on the wrong side of us, that could be bad. But like I said, they don't seem to be concerned about it. I think everybody left there yesterday feeling like, oh my God, now I need a business development person in my office, and who's gonna, you know, there's a fair amount of stress, I think, especially among the aging and ADRC programs that are integrated, because there's a lot going on. It really is a lot. And there are weeks, and they've been lately, that I've been feeling like, oh my God, I'm not sure that I can get all this accomplished. I think it's real hard to get the things you'd like to see happen started, because you're so focused on trying just to get everything done. Especially this time of year when it's the end of a quarter and all the reports are hitting up and it's the end of the year and all of that. So, and then grants are due and it just gets a little crazy. So, but those are the things that are going to be coming down. So you're going to be hearing a lot more about business development and things like that. I don't know who would want that position at the state, but I think you'd have to be crazy, because it's really just a wide open position. But apparently some other county or some other states are doing it and finding success with it, even with that CMS rule. So we'll see how that plays out. So it should be very interesting.
I have, on the meals and the nutrition, are we getting those numbers again?
You will, yes. Where are we sitting with those?
I had them ready, and then we had a hiccup with Fenimore's report, and so I didn't want
to... hiccup.
Yeah. So I'm hoping we're starting a new year, and
I think we haven't had that for quite a
while. Yeah, because it kept... It was like kind of trial and error. We were trying to get... Because what was happening is they had two flash drives to begin with, and that was kind of confusing, so we put it back down to one. And then when they were sending them in, I was alphabetizing their names and going through their reports. And Nancy had suggested that I should just have to check a few days. And then I was finding errors. And so now I have to go through every day. So I check their congregate, their home-delivered participants. I check their numbers. I make sure their deposits are right so that when Nancy reconciles, they're good. And so that being said, there's just a lot of confusion. And some of them had it saved on their hard drive, and others had it on the flash drive. So I would complete their reports for every month, and then I'd send them back, and I would get them back, and there would be months missing. So that's been my life.
And part of the craziness of this is we've got meal sites that don't have internet access, so they can't. It's not like they can wrap up a report and email it to us.
Yeah. So when I'm having to go back and forth, so like I just got Sue's last night or yesterday afternoon around 4 o'clock or 3-4 o'clock, and so. There was months missing, and the summary report takes every month. So if I would have downloaded that into the summary, it would have messed all of the numbers up. So
and
that's
actually,
why you don't.
Because
I tried getting it for this meeting so you could have it for the end of year, but I'm going to make sure now you're hopefully going to get it every month.
Okay.
Because we're starting a new year. It should all be good. I'm hoping.
I will have an end of year so I can provide some information on that next year too, because I'll be running that shortly. So the way it looks like we're providing more home delivered right now, I think, than congregate, and that seems to be the direction that we're headed in. But again, I've got about 3 more nutrition sites I want to get out to and do some things talking about food access to them, because I really think we need to come up with some things for the future. I spoke at the meeting yesterday a little bit with Jackson County, who does all of their meal sites at restaurants, and he swears it saves him money and it's much easier to run. So I am going to have a little longer conversation with Todd about that, just to see how that runs. Because I think we do need to make some changes.
Okay, because I still, you know, have that interest in
part of the problem with this reporting was it was never computerized for these mail site managers. So this has all been new to them since we've come on board with it. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any reconciliation being done. So that's all due to them. They're not used. Yes, they are.
I will
it's
say,
getting
like
a lot
the last
better.
Couple months,
well,
they were
they're not used so. To reports being set back, saying fix. You know, so it is. Yeah. It is, and it's been a longer learning curve than we anticipated. So, but it's also been glitches in our own system too that Nancy and I and Crystal need to figure out too. So. But yeah, it's an accountability thing on both ends. We are just trying to get it as accountable as we can.
Okay.
The other thing I will say is next, you will hear at the regional meeting, I will not be at, well, I might be at the board meeting. A customer satisfaction report was done by the state for ADRC customers. It came back very good. It's kind of long. So I did not bring it to this meeting. However, we are going to do a condensed version for board members, and I will bring that back next month to you because it's very good, and I would be very happy to share it with you. So just so you know.
Well, I mean, after this experience I had at the State Auxiliary Convention, it was just, you know, amazing to me that whoever put our conference together did the ADRC and Medicare and these types of things. And it's not all the older people who are having trouble, it's the younger people
who are
not sure where to go either.
Yeah, that are trying
and
to help
now
their parents.
We've been out there.
Yeah. I will say the customer satisfaction survey does show, though, that our biggest factor in people hearing about us is word of mouth, so that's good. I mean, our customers are telling other people, so that's a good thing.
That's
and
the
best it's because they're happy with
satisfied customers.
They're happy with our services. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Come before us at this time. Hearing none, November 16th is our next meeting.
Yep.
So moved. So moved. I never did look. Where is that compared to that?